develops and cultivates in this way the contemplation of dissolution, the object of which is cessation consisting in destruction, fall and breakup of all formations, then formations classed according to all kinds of becoming, generation, destiny, station, or abode of beings appear to him in the form of great terror. That means, when he has developed this knowledge of seeing the dissolution of things, then he comes to see all life, see, all kinds of becoming, generation, destiny, station, or abode of being, they all mean just life. Buddha described them in different names, and so all these are taken here. So you can just say life. So or existence. So he sees existence or life as a great terror, I mean full of danger. As lions, tigers, leopards, bears, hyenas, spirits, ogres, fierce bulls, savage dogs, red maidens, white elephants, hideous, venomous serpents, thunderbolts, channel grounds, battlefields, flaming coal pits, etc., appear to a timid man who wants to live in peace. A yogi will not see all these things. But we must understand that in the books it is given, or in all its diversity, but a particular yogi will not see all of them. He may see one or two of them. When he sees how past formations have ceased, present ones are ceasing, and those to be generated in the future will cease, in just the same way, then what is called knowledge of appearances, terror, arises in him at that stage. So he sees all phenomena, all existence as terrible. And then a simile is given. So I will not read the simile. There are two similes. The second simile on page 754, a woman with an infected womb. The Pali word used is puti bhaja. Puti means rotten, and bhaja means offspring. So, literally translated, it means a woman with rotten offsprings. Maybe this may mean the same thing as with an infected womb or something, whose offsprings do not live. See, whenever a son or daughter is born, he or she dies a little later. So that is what is meant. So he had 10 children and so on. Now, paragraph 32, it is important. But does the knowledge of appearance as terror fear or does not fear? That means, when a yogi has reached this stage, is he afraid? Does he fear or is he afraid? No. If he is afraid or if he fears, then he has fallen away from meditation, because fear is an unwholesome mental state. And so when fear is in your mind and in the mind of the yogi, then he is not doing meditation at that moment. So he does not fear, for it is simply the mere judgment that past formations have ceased, present ones are ceasing, and future ones will cease. Just as a man with eyes looking at three charcoal pits at the city gate is not himself afraid, since he only forms the mere judgment that all who fall into them will suffer no little pain, and so on. So, although he sees the existence or formations or mental and physical phenomena as terrible or as fearful, he himself does not fear them. He is not afraid of them. And then the next paragraph, 33. But it is called appearances terror only because formations in all kinds of becoming, generation, destiny, station, or abode are fearful in being bound for destruction, and so they appear only as a terror. Here is a text about its appearance to him as terror and so on. Now he sees both the sign and the occurrence as empty, vain, void, without power or guide, like an empty village, a mirage, a goblin city, etc., when it brings them to mind as not self. And so the sign and occurrence appear to him as a terror. The sign means shape and form of mental and physical phenomena. And occurrence, do you understand what is meant by occurrence? He uses occurrence many times here in this chapter. Occurrence really means not just arising. Arising and then continues to stay for some time. That the Pali word is pavada. So pavada, and it is meant not just arising. Arising and then continuing for some time. Now this is the knowledge of appearance of terror, as terror. The next is contemplation of danger. So as he repeats, develops and cultivates the knowledge of appearance as terror, he finds no asylum, no shelter, no place to go to, no refuge in any kind of becoming, generation, destiny, stage in an abode. So when he sees all these as terrible, then he finds no shelter, no place, no solace, because whatever phenomenon he contemplates on, he sees them as all disintegrating. So there is no shelter, no refuge. In all kinds of becoming, generation, destiny, station, and abode, there is not a single formation that he can place his hopes in or hold on to. The three kinds of becoming appear like charcoal pits full of glowing coals. The four primary elements like hideous venomous snakes. The five aggregates like murderers and with raised weapons. The six internal bases like an empty village. The six external bases like village raiding robbers. The seven stations of consciousness and the nine abodes of being as though burning, blazing and glowing with the 11 fires. And all formations appear as a huge mess of dangers, destitute of satisfaction or substance, like a tumor, a disease, a doubt, a calamity, an affliction, and then how and so on. So during this stage, he sees everything faulty. He cannot see anything to hold on to, anything to place his hopes on, and so on. And so he feels very helpless during this stage of meditation. It is like, they appear as a forest thicket of seemingly pleasant aspect, but infested with wild bees and so on. The place is seemingly good, but there are wild bees. A cave full of tigers, water haunted by monsters and ogres, an enemy with raised sword, poisoned food, a road beset by robbers, a burning coal, a battlefield between contending armies, appears to a timid man who wants to live in peace. So during this stage of knowledge, whatever he sees it as faulty, as dangerous, and there is no refuge or no consolation for him at that time. Sometimes yogis, when yogis have reached this stage, they don't know what to do because they feel like they are depressed or something like that. Because whatever they observe seems to be going away, and so there is no solace for him. Some even left meditation and go back to their houses because they feel so helpless at this stage of practice. And then there's a long quotation and the explanation. So we will get those, and then we come to where page 10 knowledges he understands, paragraph 42. One who understands knowledge of danger, understands, penetrates, realizes 10 kinds of knowledge. That is, the 5 based on arising, etc., and the 5 on non-arising, and so on. We have mentioned earlier. When skilled in these 2 kinds of knowledge, with skill in the 2, that is, knowledge of danger and knowledge of the state of peace, the various views will shake him not. He does not vacillate about views that occur, such as the ultimate nirvana is here and now, and the rest is clear. So this is the contemplation of danger. So at this stage, he sees danger, and also he has a knowledge of the state of peace. I mean, nirvana is peaceful, nirvana is good, and the world is full of danger, something like that he sees. So there are 2 kinds of seeing here. One is, maybe let us say, positive, and the other is negative. Then, after seeing the phenomena as dangerous, he goes on and he comes to another stage. When he sees all formations in this way as danger, he becomes dispassionate towards. Some others are translated as turning away from. So he turns away from, or he becomes dispassionate towards, is dissatisfied with, takes no delight in the manifold field of formations belonging to any kind of becoming, destiny, and so on. So when he sees danger in them, then he is dispassionate towards them. He turns away from them. Just as a golden swan that loves the foothills of Chaitya Peak finds delight not in a filthy puddle at the gate of a village of outcasts, but only in the 7 great lakes, so too this meditator swan finds delight not in the manifold formations seen clearly as danger, but only in the 7 contemplations, because he delights in development. That means he delights in the practice. Just as the lion, king of beasts, finds delight not when put into a gold cage, but only in Himalaya with its 3,000 leagues extent, so too the meditator lion finds delight not in the triple becoming of the happy destiny, but only in the 3 contemplations. And just as Chaddanta, king of elephants, all white with 7-fold stance, possessed of supernormal power, who travels through the air, finds pleasure not in the midst of a town, but only in the Chaddanta lake and woods in the Himalaya, so do this meditator elephant finds delight not in any formation, but only in the state of peace, seeing in the way beginning no arising is safety, and his mind tends, inclines, and leans towards it. Now, there is a footnote regarding Chaddanta. It's not an important thing, but we should understand this Chaddanta. Now, Danta means the tusks of an elephant. Cha means 6. So Chaddanta means could mean an elephant with 6 tusks. But in the Jataka, it is explained that not that the elephant had 6 tusks, but the elephant has had tusks which emit 6 colors, or 6 colors rays. So when people paint Chaddanta elephant, they paint with only 2 tusks. But in one of the paintings, I remember seeing in a book, the paintings from, I think, Ajanta or some caves in India. And they drew the elephant with 6 tusks. But in the Jataka book, it is stated that the elephant has tusks emitting six colored rays. That is why he is called Chaddanda. Chaddanda was one incarnation of Bodhisattva. See, before he became the Bodhisattva, he was born as an elephant, a white elephant. So this referred to him. All white with sevenfold stance, possessed of supernormal power, who travels through the air, finds pleasure not in the midst of a town, but only in the Chaddanda lake and put in the Himalayas. So too this meditator elephant finds delight not in any formation, but only in the state of peace, seen in the way beginning, non-arising is safety, and his mind tends, inclines, and leads towards that. Now, I don't want to talk about this, but in the footnote, on the expression with sevenfold stance, BM says, he didn't translate it. Sevenfold stance. Believe it or not. Now, you see the Pali there, Pali sentence. Hatha pada wala. Right? Yeah. Vati kosehi. Bhumi pusanehi. Sattahi padeti todi. Sattah padeto. He touches the ground with seven of his limbs. Hatha, in the trunk. One. Pada, 4 feet. Vala means the tail. And Vati kosa means male member. So it is explained this way in another commentary too. That is not different, not important here. So this is a knowledge of dispassion. So this knowledge of dispassion or knowledge of turning away comes after the knowledge of danger. So it is logical. So you first see the arising and disappearing, and then after that you see only the disappearing. When you see things disappearing or disintegrating, you see that they are fear, they are with fear, or they are dangerous, or they are terrible or something. And then you find fault with them because they are dangerous, they are with danger. See, you see danger in them, or you find fault with them. And after finding fault with them, you are dispassionate towards them. You don't want to have anything to do with them. So that is knowledge of contemplation of dispassion. Now here, knowledge of contemplation of danger is the same as the last two kinds of knowledge in meaning. In meaning means in essence. In reality, they are the same. Hence the ancient said, knowledge of appearances terra, while only one has three names. It saw all formations as terra, thus the name appearances terra arose. It aroused the appearance of danger in those same formations, thus the name contemplation of danger arose. It arose becoming dispassionate towards those same formations, thus the name contemplation of dispassion arose. So the three names. Also it is said in the text, understanding of appearance as terror, knowledge of danger and dispassion. These things are one in meaning, only the letter is different. So only the words are different, but the meaning is one. So they mean the same vipassana knowledge. Now when one sees danger and then wants to turn away from it, the next thing is desire for deliverance, to get out of it. First you see danger and then you become dispassionate towards it. Now you want to get rid of it. So this is for desire for deliverance. When owing to this knowledge of dispassion, this cleansement becomes dispassionate towards, is dissatisfied with, takes no delight in any single one of all the manifold formations and any kind of becoming, generation, destiny, station of consciousness or abode of being, his mind no longer sticks fast, cleaves, fastens onto them. So whatever object he observes, his mind does not want to take it actually. His mind is not stuck to them, fastened onto them, and he becomes desirous of being delivered from the whole field of formations and escaping from it. So when we really see the danger of something, We want to get out of it. We want to get rid of it. It is natural. And so here the simile is given. Just as a fish in the net, a frog in a snake's jaw, a jungle fowl shut into a cage, and so on. Now, there's a mention of Rahu here, the moon inside Rahu's mouth. And then in the footnote he said, Rahu is a name for the eclipse of sun or moon personalized as a demon who takes them in his mouth. So whenever there's an eclipse, we say, oh, Rahu has swallowed the moon, Rahu has swallowed the sun. And when at the end of an eclipse, we say, oh, Rahu has thrown up the sun or the moon. Since Rahu is a demon, Prince Siddhartha gave the name Rahula to his son, because a demon is a hindrance or an obstacle or something. So when his son was born, he thought there is another attachment for me, another object of attachment for me, and so he is like a Rahu to me. So his son was named Rahula. Now, this is a desire for deliverance, or desire to get rid of formations, to get rid of existence altogether. After that, knowledge of contemplation, of reflection. Doing it again, here. Being thus desirous of deliverance from all the manifold formations in any kind of becoming, generation, destiny, state, or abode, in order to be delivered from the whole field of formations, he again discerns those same formations, attributing to them the three characteristics by knowledge of contemplation, of reflection. So he wants to get rid of, say, the existence and all these things, but he cannot just leave them alone. He has to take them as object of his meditation again. So he had to see the impermanent suffering and no-soul nature of these formations again. So in Pali, the word is patisankhara. Pati means again, and sankhara means knowing. So knowing again. So contemplation of observing again. Observing the three characteristics again. So he sees all formations as impermanent for the following reasons, and so on. You can compare these passages with those in the section on comprehending by groups. So he again sees mental and physical phenomena as impermanent, as painful, and as not self, and in different ways, as they are non-continuous and temporary, limited by rise and fall, and so on. Now, and here a simile is given, and this is a very good simile. I often tell this simile to people. Paragraph 49. But why does he discern them in this way? That is, in order to contrive the means to deliverance. Why has he to observe these mental and physical phenomena again? Because he must have some means of deliverance. Here's a simile. A man thought to catch a fish, it seems, so he took a fishing net and cast it in the water. Now here, fishing net really means, what do you call that? Like a basket. You put it in the water, and then the fish is caught in the basket, and then you lower your hand down and then take hold of the fish. Do you call that a net?
Yes, no, fishing net.
Oh, fishing net. Oh, I don't know, because I thought net means the other thing which you. To throw into the water.
It isn't it. Yeah. I don't think there may be a name that only fishermen know. But I don't think I've ever heard of a basket used for fishing. Usually for crabs they use like pots, they're called, or baskets of some kind for lobsters, but not for fish.
Actually, not really a basket. It is a funnel shape.
Oh, okay. I've seen that. There's a net like that comes to a cone.
Yeah. And the fish call, yeah, the name for it. It's not a common word. So.
It's something like a basket, right?
A basket.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you put it in the water and the fish are caught in it. Yeah. And there is a hole to take them out.
Yeah. Okay, a trap.
Yes. So he took a fishing net and cast it in the water. He put his hand into the mouth of the net under the water and seized a snake by the net, thinking it was a fish. He was glad, thinking, I have caught a fish. In the belief that he had caught a big fish, he lifted it up to see. When he saw three marks, three lines in the neck of the snake, he perceived that it was a snake. He knew that it was a snake, and he was terrified. He saw danger, felt depression, revulsion for what he had seized, and desired to be delivered from it. So he wanted to throw it away, but he was afraid that it might bite him if he throw it away as it is. So contriving a means to deliverance, he unwrapped the coil from his hand, starting from the tip of its tail. Then he raised his arm, and when he had weakened the snake by swinging it two or three times round his head, he flung it away, crying, "Go, foul snake!" So his swinging the snake two or three times is like his contemplating on the impermanence and so on the formations again. Then quickly scrambling up onto dry land, he stood looking back whence he had come, thinking, "Goodness, I have been delivered from the jaws of a huge snake." And then applying of the simile to the actual experience. That's the next paragraph. So at this point, knowledge of reflection has arisen in him with reference to which it is said, and so on. So this is called knowledge of reflection. I think in that book, the word use is not reflection, but some other thing. Of misery. Reobservation, very good. The knowledge of reobservation. Having thus discerned by knowledge of contemplation of reflection that all formations are void, he again discerns voidness in the double logical relation and so on. They are not so easy to understand. Double is easy to understand, but quadruple logical relation. The text itself is very, very strange. No, the double, let's talk about double. So the double logical relation means this is void of self, or of what belongs to self. So this is void of self is one, and this is void of what belongs to self is other. So there are two ways of discerning it. The voidness. It is void of self. It is void of what belongs to self. Now, the quadruple logical relation, it is very difficult to understand. Do you see that?
No, I'm lost.
Paragraph 53. Yeah. And in the footnote he says, the passage is a difficult one. It is indeed. Because the Pali text, you have the Pali there. Naham kwajani kasachi kenchana tasmin na jamama kwajani kismenchi kenchana tati. Now, this passage actually, as suggested by the translator, was used by those of other faith during the time of the Buddha. And it may not be pure Pali, actually. Like, you know Prakrit languages? Prakrit language languages are similar to Pali, but they are different from Pali. It is something like corrupt form of Sanskrit or Pali. So that is why this is very difficult to understand. But let me see. The footnote is very good. The last paragraph on that page. The commentarial interpretation given here is summed up by BM as follows. Now, seeing in four ways, right? The quadruple logical relation. So four ways. The first is what? He sees the non-existence of his self of his own. That means there is no self of me. That is one seeing. And the second, he sees of his own self itself, not two, self itself, that it is not the property of another's self. Now, see, there is no self of me. And I am no property of another person's self. That is the second one. The third one is, there is no self of another person. And I am not the property of that person. So that they are four. See, there is no self in me, and somebody is not my, not the property of myself. And then there is no self of others. And I am not the property of the self of others. So in these four ways, he has to contemplate. He sees the non-existence of another self. That is one thing. He sees of another that other is not the property of his own self. So in four ways he contemplates, and then 55. In six modes, again, he contemplates that I is quite of self or of the property of self and so on. And then next paragraph, in 10 modes, and then next paragraph in 12 modes, and then next paragraph in 42 modes. When he has discerned formations by attributing the three characteristics to them and seeing them as wide in this way, he abandons both terror and delight, and he becomes indifferent to them and neutral. He neither takes them as I nor as mine. He is like a man who has divorced his wife and so on. So we'll go to that next time. So he, during this stage of knowledge, he reobserves the mental and physical phenomena in many different ways. To see the impermanent, suffering and soulless nature of them. And Mahasi Syaro said, again here, that a person need not go through all the modes given here. It is impossible. But as a book, all the methods of observing is given. But a person should not do all these in order to get to the next higher stage. So maybe one or two, he may do one or two, and then he can go on to the higher stages. Oh, one thing, please. In paragraph 57, say about 5 or 6 lines, as incapable of being had as one wishes, as insusceptible to the exercise of mastery, as alien, as secluded from past and future, in fact, as secluded from cause and result. And then in the footnote, 25, a meaning such as, what is common usage in the world is called a being, is not materiality, is not intended here because it is not implied by what they said. The actual meaning is a little different, because it is established without saying anything. What do you call that? So it's so evident that it doesn't need any explanation.
Self-evident?
Self-evident, right. So we can say just because it is self-evident. Not, it is not implied by what is said. It is so plain that it doesn't need any explanation. That is what is meant. For the common usage of the world does not speak of mere materiality as a being. So when common people say this is a being, he does not mean that the matter is being. So when he says is something is someone or something being, he means mind and matter both. So the word satta in Pali here should not be understood as meaning a being, but meaning an atma, an atta. So that is what is what the commentator is driving at. So what is intended as a being is the self that is conjectured by outsiders. That means non-Buddhist. And then let me see. Oh yes. So we'll go to equanimity about formations next time. And as I said before, this book should be very, very good, because it gives what a yogi really experiences during practice of meditation without quotations and all. So it's simpler and better reading than the Visuddhimagga, but Visuddhimagga is a basis for that book.
Can we buy these books?
Yes.
Buy them? I can buy them?
You can have them, that's why I got them.
Oh, okay, that's great. Thank you very much. Okay. Yeah. Thank you for your talk.
Thank you. Next time we'll check with this chapter. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank
you. Thank you. Thank you. We cannot skip the stages, but sometimes what happens is a person will go through two or three stages in one day. That can happen, but he cannot skip any stage because they are logical. See, one after the other. But a person will go through three stages in one day. Sometimes maybe even more than three stages in one day of meditation.